Sci-Fi and Color, the podcast about people of color in science fiction. And I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter as SF in Color.
So, before we start with today's episode about Sense8, I just wanted to say two notes. One, Into the Badlands has just been renewed for a second season.
Yay!
Yeah, I don't know. I have, like, mixed feelings because, like, I want it to be better, you know?
The thing is that I don't really believe in it. Like, I don't believe it's going to get better. But
yeah,
where it is right now, I'm still excited for a season two. Like, it ended on a cliffhanger. I want to see what's going to happen, you know? Like, I don't have confidence that it's going to be, like, great. But
right.
I'm glad I'm getting this resolution. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You want resolution.
Yeah.
Sorry if I sound, like, extra echoey today. I decided to record in my kitchen, and I feel like that was a bad choice. Should I move my laptop to my room?
I can't hear echo, but I don't know.
Okay. I just hear a bit of an echo in my headphones.
Maybe you're imagining it.
It's like Sense8 all over again, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I did just hear a police siren, so could be onto something here. So yeah, Into the Badlands is being renewed for a second season, which is awesome for us because we have more material to review and we won't be freaking out about how, oh my gosh, there's no POC in sci-fi.
I don't think it's coming out until like 2017 though. So,
I mean, it does look like it does have a very high production cost, so it would take some time to make for sure. But hey.
Hey, we're getting it.
Fingers crossed that we're still around in 2017. And still doing this thing and, you know, reviewing.
Have confidence, shows or Maggie.
Whatever. Yes. and secondly, and this is like, I guess it's kind of like weird because it's like, it's good, but also not good. Sense8 was created by the Wachowskis. And.
Right.
I'm not sure how much you guys know about the Wachowskis. We did talk about The Matrix very early on in this in this podcast. We name dropped it in episode one. So they used to be referred to as the Wachowski brothers. Then one came out as transgender, and recently, like I think yesterday,
by the time it comes out, it'll be pretty long in the past.
But in terms of, like, right now when we're releasing the episode, the other sibling also just came out as transgender, but apparently that was because she was outed by, or being threatened to be outed by print media.
Yeah.
Print media.
I did hear that.
So, I mean, that's kind of unfortunate that that's how it went down, but, like, I think that's interesting that this all happened right before we started talking about Sense8, so... Hey, and like Pride, what is it called? Pride Day or just Pride? Just Pride, right?
I do not know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just called Pride, but they do mention Pride. It's 20% component?
What?
20% component of the first episode, maybe? Is that too much?
I don't know.
15%?
I don't want to put a number on it.
But, like, you know, there is a decent amount of episode one that is devoted to Pride. So I was like, oh, this is all very, like, it all comes together. Yeah.
So anything else?
Nope. Those are just my two notes before we started talking about the episode.
Okay. So we're talking about episode one of Sense8, which can be found on Netflix or illegally on the internet, which we do not condone.
It is called Limbic
Resonance.
Limbic Resonance. Okay.
And so essentially, Sense8 is about 8 strangers from different parts of the world who all suddenly become mentally and emotionally linked.
Give me a second. I just realized this is completely unrelated, but I realized my refrigerator is making a very obnoxious hum in the background. So I am going to move the podcast to my room because it's going to be really distracting.
Okay.
So continue speaking while I move. I'll mute myself.
So the show explores subjects like politics, identity, sexuality, gender, and religion. And you can even see that just from the first episode. It's definitely a different kind of show, a different kind of sci-fi show. Some of that is because it's on Netflix and they can explore things you know, more maturely, more deeply than you could on a network television show. And I think it's such an exciting time for television right now. You can see the kind of stories which would have never previously been told. So I have completed Sense8. I watched it last year. So this is me doing a rewatch. Maggie hasn't watched it yet, so this is her first time through. So we'll try and balance everything that way. You good, Maggie?
Yeah. Let me just reconnect my charger and okie doke. Sorry, guys. Again, I wanted to avoid the obnoxious refrigerator hum. So that will be the last time I record a podcast next to my refrigerator. Oh, I like that little blind noise. Should I leave that in? I think I'll leave it in. the power of podcasting / internet radio, or whatever you want to call this thing.
Whatever.
Okay. So, yeah, this is my first time watching Sense8. When did it come out?
It came out last June. So June 2015, I believe.
Okay.
I watched it, I think, last August, maybe. So some, you know, gotcha. You know, it's been a while for me.
Okay.
Cool. In general, just some general thoughts about the show. I really liked it. I think it starts slow. That's kind of my opinion. And I remember Netflix released some data about their clients, customers, whatever, and they said that if you make it past episode 3. There's a 70% chance you will finish the series. So essentially, okay. They call episode, you know, 3 the turning point or whatever. And right. I think episode 4 is when it starts really getting exciting. So I can definitely see that. But I think I enjoyed episode 1 more than I expected to in my rewatch. What do you think about it in general?
I liked it. It's very... Okay, I still hear a lot of echo.
I hear it now, too.
Okay, I'm going to pause. I'm going to save, and I'm going to, like, reconnect my microphone, because I think that might be a problem. Okay, so I'm back. It still sounds a little echoey, but I'll just deal with that. Also, there's a gnat in my room, so that's super annoying. my life, man. Anyway, let's get back on track.
Okay.
So, yeah. Sense8. This is my first time watching it. I really liked it. I think there's a lot of potential. I mean, it does very much feel like a made-for-Netflix type of show.
Absolutely.
Because, the ending of episode 1 was not really an ending, and it wasn't even really a cliffhanger. It just was, like, a small part of a whole, which I understand that's how TV shows work, but... It just, there was no, what's the word? There's no, dang it, I'm forgetting the word. But
cliffhanger, climax, ending, satisfaction.
Yeah, satisfaction, yeah. I was thinking about a different word that means the same thing as satisfaction, but yes, that's what I'm going for. There was no, guys, closure? Yeah, that's how I was going for.
Catharsis,
yeah. Many C words that fit that same description. But, yeah, the ending of episode 1. Oh, so, you know, we're going to be talking about the episode, so spoiler alert, leave now if you haven't seen the episode. So, yeah, the ending wasn't very... Like, I guess that's how it is now with Netflix. They want you to watch the next episode immediately afterwards and just binge. So it's not, it is set up in that way where, you know, yeah. It would autoplay to the next episode and then you'd watch it. Cause it just felt like someone took a movie or something and like chopped it, at a random.
Yeah.
Part, you know, like, I mean, I've seen other Netflix shows like Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
And even those episodes have at least, they are cliffhangery endings, but like. There's a sense that it is an ending. Like, it's like a chapter of a book. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that.
Even though, yes, I binge watch Orange is the New Black because I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to know what happens next. But it's still, like, if I had more self-control, you could still stop it there and be like, well, you know, that's one episode. Like, there was a beginning and end, and it's very, like, self-contained. But with when I like when Sense8 ended, I was just like, huh? Like, that's where they chose to end it? I mean, it wasn't bad. I just thought the sense of stopping it there was interesting. But anyway,
I think some of the challenges that, you know, Sense8 faces isn't just because it's a Netflix show exactly, but also because it's trying to tell 8 separate, not exactly separate, but mostly separate stories, especially at this point in the game.
And oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, you can see that from the first episode. We get very little of a few of the characters, and it's, you know, it's a very, it's not quite a balance, but, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. It's definitely skewed more towards, I guess, the woman from London and also the Chicago police officer, towards the end at least.
And we do get a fair amount of Wolfgang as well from Berlin.
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, he's more, like, in the middle of the episode.
Right.
I think. Yeah.
I did, when I was rewatching, though, and I don't want to jump to the end, but I was very kind of impressed with how the climax ended up.
First episode?
Yeah, the first episode. Like, I kind of remember it kind of just being blah all the way through. Like, you know, there's rising and falling action, but not really typical TV, you know,
rising and falling
climax. But I was actually impressed when I rewatched it. I was like, oh, it actually does have a climax. Because it's, you know, it's the intercut of the Chicago officer, Will, and the safecracker, Wolfgang. You know.
Oh, you mean like them breaking the safe and at the same time he's bringing that shot kid to the hospital?
Right, right.
Okay, I see. Yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking about it in that traditional story sense, like, here's the, you know, climax in the middle of the episode. Like,
it's not the middle of the episode.
Yeah.
It's towards the end. But yeah, it's a very unusual show, the way it operates.
But it works. But
I think it works better in the later episodes. I don't know. I feel like a lot of Netflix shows are meant to be binged, but I actually don't really like binging Netflix shows. I actually like binging a lot of other shows, but I feel like Netflix shows in particular aren't very good for binge watching.
That's ironic.
I know, right? I don't know why. It's just, I feel like sometimes it's, I don't know. I don't know why. Huh. I feel like maybe it covers really dramatic topics, and like at the end of an episode I feel like I need
you
a
feel
break.
Like emotionally exhausted.
Yeah, like I need like a break or something.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, Sense8 for whatever it is isn't exactly a popcorn show. It doesn't really shy away from deeper issues, and you know, we're getting a complex story from each of the 8 characters.
Oh yeah, for sure. So yeah, I can see that, because I mean, at most, I feel like Orange is the New Black is like the, what's the word? Oh my gosh.
Classic?
I'm like, you know what? No, not the classic. I'm sorry. I'm like very sleep deprived right now, so I'm like trying to like hold onto my brain. But
it's like the opposite of last time's episode. I was like, I could barely hold it together. Really, I was exhausted, and you were just like, I'm peppy. So now we've switched.
I can't even remember what I was saying. Orange is the New Black. Oh, is the, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the word. The opposite? The exception. The exception to the rule. Because usually I can only binge watch like 2 or 3 episodes at a time, but like Orange, oh god, that. And like, I guess I did binge 3 episodes at a time for Orange, but like, they were so long. They're like 45 minutes long. They like ate up my whole week. And I binge watched, what happened was I binge watched season 1 and 2 in the same go.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of episodes, and then they're long, and then I just 2 weeks of my summer were just gone. So I controlled myself a lot better for season 3. I think everyone did. Literally everyone who watched season 3 of Orange is the New Black, they had seen episodes 1 and 2. I mean, sorry, seasons 1 and 2, they were like, we need to calm down and watch it one episode at a time because we are all too emotionally exhausted from last June. And I was like, I am right with you. But yeah, I mean, I like Sense8. Did I think the ending was cray enough to make me want to binge watch the second one? No, but I do want to eventually see the second one. But I wasn't, like, you know, losing my mind over it like, I guess, another show. But yeah, you're right. It's part of it is the, like, how emotional, like, how heavy an episode can get. And you're just like, I'm so drained by the end of it. I didn't find Sense8 to be a draining show. But yeah, some shows are like that, especially Netflix ones.
Yeah. Just let me say one thing. Yeah. I watched a season and a half of House of Cards. And that was a show that I started binge watching. And essentially, I burned myself out. So by the time we reached, like, halfway through the second season, I was so annoyed and exhausted at the characters that I have stopped and will never continue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people who have seen House of Cards may know what event triggered this exhaustion, but we will leave that where it is.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Yeah. So the opening of this episode, Limbic Resonance,
yes.
I believe. You saying?
Yes.
Okay. I have the name in front of me, but it's like covered up because I minimized the window.
Limbic Resonance.
So I really like that. So we start off
With
Angelica in a unknown church in Chicago. When they, like, pan down and you see the church windows kind of lit up in orange and you pan down to her, like, it kind of reminded me of Suspiria. And I don't know if you guys know what that is, but Suspiria was this, like, Italian horror film that came out in, like, the 70s or something, and it is gory and gross. Oh my god. So I was like, please don't let this be horror. And, like, there was definitely a lot of horror-esque, components in this show. At least that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, like, scary, but, like, you know, certain shots, like an earlier shot where, is his name Will?
Yes.
The police officer, Will, is walking through these, like, creepy abandoned corridors and, like, is chasing after this girl. I was like, oh god, please let this not be horror. And it wasn't horror, but it does have, you know, I think stylistically and
it
visually
toes the
has
line.
That it has that those elements of horror.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh, this is reminding me of Suspiria. And not that I hate that movie, but that movie is, like, so scary, man. Like, oh my gosh. If you like horror, you would like Suspiria. It's, like, gross and disgusting and, like, amazing. But, like, I'm, like, faint of heart. I am faint of heart. So, like, I was just like, well, that image is forever burned in my brain and I will never unsee it again. But, yeah, Angelica.
Yeah, so she is crying out for Jonas, who is a man who we see isn't actually there, but from her perspective, she can see him.
Oh.
Ooh.
And then she says that she can see them, and then we see our cast of characters.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if you remember this, but the music they showed during this part when they were showing all of the characters was so good. Oh my gosh.
It was like the violins.
Honestly, I don't even remember. I just remember it being in love.
I like the score. I did like the score, but I mean, I'm not sure if there were some musical choices that I was like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, like, I feel that.
Like their little intro thing where they're like all over the world. It's just shots of like people all over the world. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's right after the title card, after it says Sense8, and then there's like a whole montage where the credits where like
you mean
all
the opening sequence?
Yeah, the opening sequence.
Oh,
what did
okay.
What did I say that was?
No, I just thought you were talking about something in the show. No, the opening sequence. I actually have very mixed feelings about that.
I'm not too keen about the music in the opening sequence.
I like
maybe because I have. Maybe because I have a very, very stereotypical idea of what music should be set to a around-the-world montage. But I just, like, does that make sense? Like, there's some musical themes or musical cues that are kind of stereotypical when it comes to that kind of thing, and it just didn't fit it. But maybe that's just, like,
maybe that's
boo
good
on me, because I like to be trite and boring. But you said you like the music, okay, but so is it a visual that bothers you?
Hmm. Okay, so I have a lot of mixed feelings about the opening, because I feel like part of this is just, like, a Netflix-ism, you know? Like, I don't understand why Netflix puts really, really long openings on their shows that they know we're all going to binge watch. Like, I have seen 10 episodes in a row. I don't need to see the opening sequence again, which is, like, 2 minutes long.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Okay, yeah. So, like, I really like the opening sequence. I thought the music worked. I really love seeing all the different places around the world. And I watched it when I watched the show initially. I watched the opening sequence, I'm pretty sure, once. And then I would click through it because, look at me, I'm saying fast forward. I'm so old.
You can say fast forward.
Whatever. I didn't want to watch it again. Like, I can admire that it's a good opening, but I want to just get to the crap. Maybe that's on me.
I mean, I usually will sit through openings because that's just, like, the person I am. And it's kind of been ingrained. It's also been ingrained in me that you should, like, watch things from start to finish, especially as a cinema major.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know how I feel about this opening. I mean, after a while, if I get really annoyed by a Netflix opening, I'll just, like, skip it altogether. But usually I'll watch it, like, the first 5 times. Unless it really pisses me off, then I'm just like, we're done here.
Yeah. I mean, I skipped the House of Cards opening, I think, every time, but the first time, too. That's also another long, well-done, but exhausting opening.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, TV, you can see on TV, people have nice openings, but they're, like, short, sweet, to the point. And they can be beautiful and good and have good music, but they're just shorter.
Yeah.
And
I was just gonna say, like, you can see in this show, I mean, you can see on all Netflix shows, but they're just sequences that you know would be, like, the first thing to be cut if this was, like, a real TV show. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, unnecessary, you know, long sequences. And I guess. It's kind of cool to not, like, go away from it. Like, you know, essentially scenes that are completely unnecessary.
It's, like, more indulgent for the creator.
Yeah. And I honestly don't mind that. But, you know, maybe, I don't know. It doesn't make the show as succinct as it could be.
Okay, yeah.
Like, honestly, you probably, like, this is about an hour long, I think. You could probably cut this to, like, 48 minutes without really losing anything. And I don't, like, I'm not saying that to be mean.
Yeah, no.
And I actually like how it is, and I don't... I was still complimenting the show.
Yeah, but
it's just a
fact. It could be shorter. Yeah, it could be shorter.
But it's okay. Do you want to get into the people?
Yeah, let's get into the... I did want to say, I had a note about the beginning. What is up with the foil? Or, now that I've seen, that's what my original thought was. When I first saw her taking out that foil out of that little tin, I was like, what is going on? But then I was thinking, well, it seems like it's easier to connect with people across the globe if you are under the influence of some kind of drug. So unless, was it just as simple as that? That the foil was, that the foil was part of her drug use? Or is the foil some other thing? I guess that's kind of weird for me to ask you, since you probably don't want to spoil any episodes for me.
Well, I don't want to spoil, but I also don't have a lot of memories.
Oh.
I actually don't remember.
Because the guy with the glasses who shows up, the antagonist, he looks at the foil and is like, oh, so this is how you did it. And I was like, well, like, now I'm thinking, is it the drugs that she used to communicate with these people? And
actually, I think I do remember
drugs
now.
Or is, like, the foil a completely separate thing? So anyway, I guess you can't really give me I can't really answer that. But that's just something that ran through my mind going like, I wonder what's up with this.
She just puts on a tinfoil hat and she she can get the signals she acquires from the aliens.
It looked a little too small for her head to make a tinfoil hat.
It's a very small head. I don't know.
But yeah, no. I mean, throughout the course of the episode, I realized, oh, hey, drug use helps facilitate this process for whatever reason. So at least two people, we see that drug use facilitates this process. So that's something I could kind of see being a thing. But anyway, I don't know if you agree. I just see you making like thoughtful, pensive looks up into the air. But you don't have to give anything away. I'm just kind of...
Yeah, I won't say anything. But also understand that if you ask me questions, like as I'm watching the show, a lot of things are coming back to me about their individual plots. But like the last, I think, 5 or 6 episodes, I will say I binge watched. So I don't really remember that well. So this is going to be a journey for both of us.
Okay. Wait, so remind me, how many episodes are there total?
There are 12.
Okay. Okay, cool. So there's 12. We got through the first one. All right. In that intro, I did notice that, hey, there was a Twin Peaks shout out. So that was kind of cool and fun. I really want to see that show and saw a bit of a spoiler for Twin Peaks, but not really. Like, why it's given a shout-out in the opening credits. It's not too spoilery. But, anyway, there is a connection to that show, which I really want to see. And, also, Freema, I never know how to pronounce her last name. Agamemnon?
I'm not the expert on pronunciation.
The woman from Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. Martha.
Martha, yeah. We all know who Martha is. Freema is in this show, and I was like, hey. That's really cool. But then, I mean, usually I'm really bad at picking out people's bad accents, but, like, because I knew she was a British actress, I was, like, paying very close attention to her American accent, and I was like, it's not bad, it's actually pretty good, but it's very inconsistent. Like, she goes, like, from Valley Girl to, like, this other American accent, and I'm like, But anyway, I was only paying attention to that because I usually don't notice terrible accents. I'm usually really bad at noticing it, so I was trying really hard to focus on it this time.
So do you want to start with Nomi, then?
Sure. Yeah, let's go with that.
So we've got Nomi. Can I just say I love Freema's hair? Francisco. What?
I love her hair. Oh, who's my hair? God. Freema's hair.
Oh, yeah. Hair. Oh, my gosh. I agree.
Freema's hair. Who else has awesome hair in the show? Please.
I like no Riley's one. Hair.
Riley's hair is good, but Freema's hair is like a whole other level.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, so how Nomi is her name?
Nomi, yes.
Okay. I don't have too many. I don't honestly have that many notes about this show. I was kind of just absorbing everything.
We open on her and the other character.
I have her name on internet.
Martha. I wrote all of my notes calling her
don't
Martha.
Don't call her Martha.
Sorry.
That's not her name.
Or Freema. But I don't remember, like, the name of the character.
Okay. I mean,
I think of all the names of the character at the end of this.
Okay, hold on.
That's
one
of the things. They introduce a lot of characters.
Yes,
because
it's a
they introduce, like, 8 localized worlds, you know?
Yes. Okay, so Freema's character is named Amanita?
Amanita.
Something like that.
Amanita.
That's what it says on
okay.
Amanita. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to remember that. I'm not going to remember that. I'm trying hard to remember all of these names. It's a lot of names. Okay. Anyway. So we open on
Nomi on the list.
Amanita and Nomi having some nice lady love.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't really have... Again, I this is my first time watching. Everything was very exposition-y, so, like, I don't have too many notes outside of, like, oh, these are some cool-looking shots, and, like, I don't have enough of a basis to really build.
Yeah, it's a very exposition-y episode.
Yes.
But I can see it kind of laying the foundation of a lot of things. Like, it's frustrating sometimes watching, like, shows like this, because you know that it's all going to pay off, but at the same time, you also know that, like, there are certain expectations you should have of an audience, and laziness and not waiting for something to pay off if you have to wait a long time is definitely one of them.
Do you think the payoff is long?
No, I mean, it's still only a 12-episode season, so it's not that long, but I finished the first episode the first time, and I wasn't dying to watch the next one.
Yeah, same. Like, I want to see it, but I'm not like, I need to see it now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure the first three or so episodes got me. It took me a while to get through.
Okay. So that's why you wanted to cover two episodes in one episode. I see you now.
Yeah.
Maybe anyway. We can squish episodes two and three into, like, I don't know, one.
We'll figure it out. Okay, right. So we have the Pride event in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I guess I could go through all the plot stuff, but there really isn't that much to talk about.
Go on.
What do you have to say?
Just reflecting on it now. Because, again, I didn't really take too many notes, but mm-hmm. it is kind of nice to see that even though Freema's playing a kind of, like, loose, like, spirit, like free-spirited, like, kind of just, like, wild girlfriend type, like, she doesn't fall into the stereotype. Like, it's nice to see, like, we get a flashback to an important event for Nomi. And, you know, like, that's when she decided that, you know, she was committed and, you know, loved her girlfriend. And it was, like, kind of nice to see that being subverted, you know?
Yeah.
Because it would have been so easy for her to have been just, like, your stereotypical free-spirited lesbian or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it could have been so easy to go down that road. But it was really nice that they didn't. And
they actually defy that. They actually keep playing with that kind of idea, not with just Nomi, but with all the different characters. You can see I'm just kind of wielding around a pair of scissors, so I'm gonna put that down.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous and kind of strange, so please put that down.
I mean you can't defy every
stereotype
and stereotype, yeah, but I feel like they do make an effort to do so at a number of different times throughout the show, which I do appreciate.
Yeah, like, it was kind of nice seeing, I think Diego is the name of Will's, cop friend. Yeah, it was pretty funny to, like, see how he was, like, and we talked about this a little bit, I think, in a previous episode of the podcast, but, like, how, like, being a nerd is kind of, like, okay nowadays, and he's kind of like low-key nerd Diego. I mean, like, he's
why,
like,
why
he's,
do you,
like,
say that?
Because he's like referencing like X-Files and Doctor Strange. Like, he's very low-key nerd, but like, it's there, so like, it's kind of nice to see, like, nerd. It's kind of nice to see, like, I don't know if you'd call it like depths necessarily, but like different nerd, layers
nerd
to, like,
representation.
Sure. But, like, also, like, just, like, kind of seeing, like, layers within characters. Like, he's not some, like...
Like an onion.
Yeah, if we're going down the Shrek route, yeah. Like an onion.
People have layers. Onions have layers. Ogres have layers. Let's move on. Okay. So, how about we go to people... Unless you have anything else on Nomi.
You
I did really
about...
like the... Mm-hmm. I really did like the AIDS HIV performance. And I found
I did
that
like that
was,
a lot, too.
Actually, I found that was my favorite instance where Angelica just kind of pops into one of their lives.
Oh,
I don't know
why.
About
how you actually liked the story.
No, I liked the story as well, but I felt like when Angelica showed up, I felt like, I don't know, it came together really nicely for me.
It was done well, like the way she was integrated into the scene.
Yeah, sometimes it kind of just felt weird or at least kind
forced.
Of awkward, but it didn't feel natural, but... It all kind of thematically came together.
Yeah. I just had a little thought in my head, but I'll save it for later. But eventually, I mean, maybe I'll cross-post it to, like, social media, but there's, like, this excellent experimental film about AIDS and HIV, which is good. Mm-hmm. But I'll cross-post it to the social media. Anyway,
And I will, I will just say this. You know, we're getting different characters in each episode, so I kind of know what's going to be coming a little bit for Nomi's character. So I'm just like, we can talk about a lot of her stuff a little bit later.
Okay,
or in another episode, because, like, we're going to get a lot more.
Right.
Of all the characters, but, you know.
Yeah.
We get certain focuses in each episode.
Okay. So let's talk about, I cannot keep these characters' names in my head.
There's so many!
The woman who's from Korea. Let's talk about her.
Okay, yeah.
Let me pull up her name.
Her name is Sunbak. I actually don't remember.
You're right.
I wrote it down, but, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about her real quick. She didn't have too much to do in this episode, but, I did like her scene. I just thought it was very... It kind of brought up an interesting question if China is more misogynistic than Korea. I guess that's not really what ran through most people's heads, but that's what ran through my head. And I was like, I don't quite know the answer to that, because I feel like in certain situations you can construe it the other way around. Like, in some respects, maybe Korea is more misogynistic than China. I know it's not the point. But it's just something that, like, you know, went through my head while I was watching this. But yeah, like, clearly she's an awesome, strong woman. Like, she has, oh dear. Sorry, I just opened my drawer and realized I left fries in there for the past couple days. This is my life now.
Okay.
And then I'm going to close the drawer.
And pretend that never happened.
I knew I was going to forget. I was like, Maggie, don't forget to put it in the fridge. And I forgot. Oh, dear.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Let's come back to the serious Asian lady in this story, a.k.a. not me.
Sunbak. Okay.
Sunbak, yes.
From Seoul.
So, yeah, she's from Seoul, where every Korean is ever from. That came out grammatically wrong, but you know what I mean.
Every portrayal of a Korean in media is from Seoul. Aren't just making a generalization about all
this
Koreans
girl gets me.
And that no one exists outside of Seoul.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
When I'm delirious. Okay, moving on.
I think I've caught the giggle.
All right. Calm down. Okay. So, we have to cut this, man. It's not working out. Okay, so
I'll figure it out.
I did like the portrayal that she was. I can't stop. She was a very, like, she is a strong, like, independent woman, for lack of a better phrase. No, seriously. Like, our introduction to her is her, like, doing, like, some form of, like, Tai Chi or something. Just, like, doing kind of relaxation / martial arts, like, on her own. Which was really cool. And because, yeah, like, the whole stereotype of, like, docile, servile Asian woman is, like, hopefully a thing of the past now. But she's not, like, straight-up dragon lady either. So, you know, that's good, too. So we see her. That's how we're introduced to her. Her kind of just, like, going through her exercises. And then later on we see her, like, stepping into her brother's position of, like, the CFO of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Or, correct me if I'm wrong, is she the CFO or is she stepping in as CFO?
I don't believe she's not really stepping in, I don't know her official title, but she is the one who essentially is the... I don't really remember exactly the position that she takes in the company. She's a lot more active than her brother.
It certainly seems
that way. I mean, even in that scene, you can see that, you know, the brother gets a lot more of the attention and the glory for the work that she probably does.
Yeah. I was what a piece of work.
Oh, trust me, it's going to continue.
Oh, my God. I was like, are you for real right now, bro? And it wasn't even that bad, but, like, I could feel it coming, too. Like, I know he's going to get worse. Like, you just see from his actions, like, this is not a good guy. Like,
Okay, so Sunbok isn't my favorite of the eight, mm-hmm. but I find that the plot line that she gets is my favorite, I think. Like, each one has their own problems to deal with that, you know, kind of come out throughout the show. Mm-hmm. But her plot, I think I'd have to say, is my favorite.
Okay.
So you can look forward to that. I don't know.
I mean,
you don't really get much of her in this episode, though.
Yeah. I mean, but the, like, obnoxious Chinese businessman, like, ugh, gosh, being so, like, super misogynistic. Like, you just, you see her, like, fists, like, ready to strike. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I want you to deck him so bad, but, like, ugh, we all know it's not gonna happen, unfortunately. At least not yet. I'd love to see her, I would love to see her deck him in the future or something. But, yeah, I mean, I could see how, like, I'm interested in her story. But, yeah, they didn't really explore too much in this episode.
Yeah.
And then
we also get a little bit of Caffeus, who is the man from Kenya.
Okay.
We see very little of him as well. We see him tending
to his
mother. Yeah, and he's the driver of the minivan bus. And, you know, business isn't very good. His van is Van Damme, and everyone loves Batvan. I did like the scene, like, with the chicken.
Oh, that was awesome.
And then the chicken goes to the Sunbok. That was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. It was just, like the dissonance of it was so great, too. You see this chicken just in this, like, immaculate office space. Like,
yeah,
what are
good.
You doing here? I wonder, part of me wonders if that's, like, if there's, like, weird shout-outs between Netflix series because there was a chicken episode in Orange is the New Black. But that only briefly flashed through my head. I don't think it was, like, meant to be that kind of a thing.
Do you have anything else about Caffeus?
His name is awesome, for one.
Yeah.
His name is awesome. But I don't remember him being referred to by that name.
I looked it up because I don't think he gets a name in the episode. Mm. Or they don't name him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing too interesting is happening there either.
Yeah, again, it's like there's so many different interconnected stories and it's just getting started. So, like, part of me is trying to look for symbolism and I'm not sure if I'm seeing things or if I'm actually picking up on, like, I'm like, is the Van Damme thing with the guy fighting without masks or gadget, is that a symbolic thing that's going to be important in the future? Probably, but, like, I have no evidence of that because I haven't seen episode 2 yet, you know? Like, I'm just kind of speculating at this point.
Yeah.
Although, I feel like, from what very little I got, I'm holding on to that. I'm like, that has to be important, so we'll see if I'm right. But, yeah, I mean, I like his character. Anytime someone says, I have a feeling today's going to be a good day, they're either very, very right or very, very wrong. So I'm like, but then again, maybe I'm reading too much into these things. So I'm just like,
Or
I was, I kept waiting for something very horrible to happen or very good to happen. But it just ended up kind of just being like, oh, slow day for business. So, I don't know. Again, I'm reading too much into I'm reading too much into things, but it's also because they're...
Or maybe you're reading just enough into something.
Who knows?
I don't know.
But again, part of it is because there's so many different stories being spread over, you know, like, it's 60 minutes to tell 8 different stories. So, like,
right.
You're not going to get too much in one go.
Right.
Cool. So, what else is on my list?
There's also Kala. From India.
Okay, right.
Unless you had anything else about Caffeus.
Let's talk about her.
Yeah, Kala from India. She's actually my favorite.
Character?
Character, yeah. Which, I'm not really sure why, but I really just like her. And she's also really pretty.
Yeah.
Like, really pretty. Anyway.
I would say for her section, So, I guess this is a thing with all of these characters. They all conveniently happen to speak English, so that's a thing. I know, it's TV, it's, like, convenient. So we'll go with this fact that she is somehow praying in English instead of, you know, a native language or something. You seem to be having thoughts about future episodes, so...
I will say nothing. I'm just going to let that slide.
Although I could explain it away by saying, oh, she doesn't want the people around her to understand what she's saying and in the temple, so maybe that's why she's speaking English. But anyway...
She also could just be speaking English. You never know.
It's a thing. Like, people were complaining about how Slumdog Millionaire, people are speaking English in it for most of the time, when that doesn't really make any realistic sense. But, again, this is TV and film. Like, I get it. It just makes sense to make it all English, or as much English as you can. Anyway, moving on. Her story specifically, not talking about, like, oh, we're around the world and everyone speaks English. Her story specifically,
So she hears the rain.
Yeah.
But it wasn't raining. Yeah. There are actually puddles on the ground, so I feel like rain is actually a decent question.
Well, those puddles on the ground could have been rain from the day before, or they could have been, other things, like if people are washing the street or something.
That's true.
But, I mean, I also feel an affinity to her character. I think she's just very sweet, and her relationship with her dad is really nice, and it's like, aww. I do have to say, though, like, it's such a tired old trope that, like, the arranged marriage is not what you want. Like,
it is.
By
it absolutely is.
God, has that been done to the death?
And here's the thing. Ugh. It's kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's just one of those tropes that I like it. Like, you know, sometimes you can see it done 1,000 different ways. And you are going to watch it every time. Like, some people are like that with love triangles. I hate love triangles. I think they're literally the worst. But, you know, each person, their own trope affinity.
I just have to say, like, I just feel like from a Western perspective, people kind of tend to crap on arranged marriage a lot. So
absolutely.
I'm just kind of like, not this again. But I understand that it goes both ways. Like, an arranged marriage can go really well, or it can go really bad, or it could just be mediocre. But you could say the same thing about love marriage, where it could be really good, or really bad, or be mediocre. So, I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna say, like, oh, arranged marriages are horrible, but I'm also not gonna go around and say, oh, they're, like, awesome. Like, it's, like, a done-to-the-death trope, and I'm just like, really? Like, when she was, like, when she had her little, when she was praying or at the altar thing, and then she was saying, oh, but there's just one problem. I was like, is it gonna
that
be something?
That was a little much.
No. I was like, is it gonna be something exciting, or is it gonna be, I don't love him? And of course it was, I don't, I'm like, what if it's something like, but I'm gay or something? I was like, oh my gosh, that would have been like, I don't know, that would have like blown me away. But like, it was just like, oh, I just don't love him. And I was like, okay, I've seen this before. Like, give me something new. And I mean, that was just me wanting something kind of different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that I think that it would add to the story if she was gay or something else or blah, blah, blah. I was just like, really? Like, this is it? This is, like, all we're getting? Oh, I don't love it. Like, please.
One of the problems with that trope, I will say, is that there aren't a lot of ways for it to go down looking forward. You know, I mean, like, you can already, you know, extrapolate how this is gonna go down.
She doesn't love him.
And I will not make a comment, but I'm making a comment. But I'll shut up.
But yeah, it's just, I do like her character.
I really like her character.
And, you know, are represented. Sorry. I mean, I do like how the women are represented in this universe. They all seem to be pretty well educated. I don't know how well educated the woman from London is, But we do hear, I mean, we do see one as a CFO, another, like, the other two are presumably college graduates. Like, it is kind of nice to see that, I don't know, right. It's just nice to see competent women, I guess.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And I wouldn't even call the woman from London the DJ. I wouldn't even call her incompetent, because she clearly has a lot of skill when it comes to, you know, being a DJ. Art. So, yeah, it's nice seeing, you know, they're not, like, perfect, invulnerable, you know, Mary Sues or anything, but, like, they have competency, which is nice. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things we were talking about way back when, about, like, writing, about how you get people to like a character is one thing is competency.
Yeah, they have to be good at something. Usually what they do, but it doesn't have to be. But yeah, absolutely. So do you want to leave Kala behind?
Yeah, let's move on to... who do you want to move on to next? I have someone if you don't have someone lined up.
You can pick.
Let's talk about Wolfgang, I guess?
Sure.
The dude from Germany. Just attended his father's funeral.
It's not... Is it his father's funeral? No, it's not his father's funeral.
Oh.
Because...
Right. Because, wait... I'm confused now. I mean, because, yes, his dad was... We do see him visit his dad's grave and then pee on it.
No, and it but does that, look like he's been there for a while. His father died in 2011. I looked at what the grave said. So, yeah, it's 2011. Okay. The funeral...
Wasn't it 2001?
Okay, whatever. One of those.
I distinctly remember... I didn't write it down, but I was like, oh, this is set in 2001, because I thought his father had just died, and then he was... But then I was, like, a bit confused, because I was like, how is he already in the ground? Anyway, I guess we've decided that 2001 is in the past, and that's when his father died.
Okay, whatever year it was. the funeral... is, you know, they said that the person they buried was someone who kept talking about Wolfgang's father before he died.
Okay. That's a problem I had with this show, was I couldn't quite understand what people were saying, so I kind of just extrapolated at times. I think next time I watch it, I gotta turn on the closed captioning or something. But I definitely lost a lot of information, because I was like, I don't understand what they're saying, but I'm not gonna pause
it. There are some definitely complicated moments, because you're kind of dropping into these people's lives without a lot of introduction.
Mm-hmm. But okay, so like, what you're saying makes sense to me, because I do remember someone talking about that briefly.
Yeah.
Right, so the person who passed away had been talking about Wolfgang's father.
Correct.
Who's an enormous douche. Oh my gosh. Ugh. Like, just the way he acted at that play. That was heartbreaking. I was like... I would hate my dad if he did that to me. He just, like, laughed at him during a school concert. Like, what is wrong with you, dude?
Yeah.
Just mess with him emotionally. Ugh. That's so horrible. Anyway,
part about Wolfgang is... they are going to break into a building. So they're going to steal something from a safe, and the safe is impossible to crack. And it is the safe that's impossible to crack that his father was also unable to open and caused his untimely demise, I think.
Right. Where I got a little confused was... that guy with, like, the tattoo on the back of his head, right? Who's at the funeral and is, like, ribbing them and whatever. Is he, like, I understand he's a rival. But I don't understand, like, so is he competing with them? Like, they are a family of thieves or whatever, a group of thieves. They went to the safe, cracked it before he came, stole it, and he was going to plan on cracking. He was also planning... on cracking the safe and stealing the gems, like he's their rival, like that. Because I didn't quite get the impression that he owned that building or lived there or whatever.
It seemed like he was kind of breaking into.
Yeah, it seemed like they were kind of doing this to be like, let's get the gems so he can't get the gems.
Yeah,
something. I was very confused by the Wolfgang thing. Like, when it started, I was like, what is happening? Like,
yeah, yeah, I think funeral, it's kind of confusing. On? We do get some hints of kind of an organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of group, and we'll kind of get more into that as the season progresses. But yeah, it's a little difficult to follow. I'll agree.
Okay, because after some like thinking through of the whole thing, I think the kind of theory I just gave you is what I think happened, but I'm still not 100% sure that's what happened. I like how they tied in the Eurovision parody to his school performance. It was so sad. I do have to say, and I know this is like, again, not a huge major part of the show, but both the DJ set and the Eurovision parody, I was like not impressed with, like, I'm sorry, I just was not impressed by like the, I guess, production value of those specific scenes or instances. Mm. You know what I mean? And I know it's not important, so it doesn't matter. But I was like, oh, this party, like, it's not as bad as, like, a fake ABC Family Channel rave, a la Dr. Ken. What I mean by that, it's not like, what I'm saying is, like, think of, like, an actual rave, and think of how it's toned down for TV.
Yeah.
Do
you mean in content or in production value?
It's just like it just felt fake. But I know it's not important to the story, because, and also they're telling like 8 different stories. So like, I get that's not really high on their priority list. But I was just like, I don't know how I feel about this DJ set. Like, okay, they say, you're such a great DJ and you feel the music. And I'm like, I believe you, but based on that music, I do not believe you. Sorry. And I know it's not important to the story. It's just more important that we take their word for it and go with it and whatever. And that's fine. But the same for the Eurovision thing. Like, I was like, I don't know if they're deliberately being cheesy by doing this weird, like, fake green blobby screen behind her, or if they're just like actually parodying like how bad Eurovision is, because I've never actually seen Eurovision. I just know that that's what they're parodying. Does it make sense? Like, I don't know if I'm making sense right now.
No, I think I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
It's just like the production value of those two, those two specific instances. I was like, production value on this is a little strange.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Wolfgang.
I really liked his friend. I know it's mean, but it was the only time that I wanted to laugh, like, the whole episode, when he just, his matter-of-fact delivery of how the contestant, its eyes are too close together, and how she looks like a camel. It's
that
mean.
Was great.
But it was just like, oh my gosh. Because it wasn't like a typical insult or whatever you usually hear. It was just, oh! Oh no, now I see it.
Well, no, they set it up for that because they did a crazy, like, that angle on the contestant's face was, like, super, like, fisheye crazy.
Yeah, I saw, like, it was distorted.
Yeah. But I mean, like, we still got his point and, like, what he was saying, so. Yeah, no, yep. I mean, you gotta love it. He just, like, in the middle of a heist, just stops to watch, like, freaking Eurovision.
Why not? You know what?
Like, why not? Life is too short, I guess. His friend was... I thought his friend was pretty good comic relief, to be honest. Yeah. And I bought him as a real person. I guess it's weird saying this, but when I see unconventional-looking people on TV, I'm like, yes, I can believe you as, like, a regular human being, if that makes any sense.
I understand. Because usually the people on TV don't look like the people in real life.
Yeah, and I was, like, looking at his, like, you know, friend comic relief, I'm like, you look like an actual human being. He actually reminds me of specific, like classmates I had, so it was a little weird. I was like, this is a little too strange. But anyway, I don't know, do you have any more notes on Wolfgang? I feel like...
I don't know, like, when, you know, we heard about how he had that horrible instance at his school recital, and then it's like the tie back to how, you know, this woman's never going to win because she looks like a camel. And it's like, oh no, he wants it more now. And he tries again and he gets it. Whoa.
Well, it's more like, know. I want to spite my dad and blah, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. But yeah. I did really like the sequence where he's doing the, he's doing the wiggling of the
knob on the
safe. Yeah, the knob. And, like, you can see, like, the different, levers kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Evening that was cool. out. Like, you can see, like, the inside of how it's actually working. And I was like, this is so cool.
For the hardest safe in the world, it seemed pretty simple.
I don't know anything.
I mean, visually, it's very nice. I did love that, like, kind of macro shot of the knob and then, like, the sweat dripping down his face. Like, it was a really cool shot. And sorry, backtracking. I know I said I didn't have any more notes on the woman from India, but I do have some notes. I did like that shot where she's in the temple and, like, the smoke is rising up and there's, like, a lens flare coming through the window. And I was like, oh, such a great shot. I do love, like, there are some fantastic shots in this series, and some are just pretty strange too, like when I need to look up the DJ woman's name. Let me find it.
Riley.
Yes, they said her name a bazillion times. I don't know how I forgot it. Oh, of course her name is Riley Blue. That's hilarious. when Riley is like kind of transported to San Francisco and sees these, like, I guess not drag queens, drag fairies,
yeah,
kind of waltzing around. Yeah. That was kind of great because it's such a strange, like, scene if you have no context for what's going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like, I could be like, yeah, I can understand why you're confused, because I'd be confused too if I was suddenly transported to this place and men in drag were waltzing around and giving me pot brownies or whatever. Anyway, so I like the visuals in this show are pretty great.
Yeah, I think I'm not really the expert on this, but it's pretty.
If it's pretty, it's pretty. I mean, I think my favorite shot was, like, that shot where Riley, like, later on, where Riley's kind of going down into a cave or something.
Yeah.
I love that shot.
When she's on the drugs.
Yeah. The only thing
that was really pretty.
The only thing I didn't like was when she was on the drugs. The slow-mo effect.
On her?
Yeah, on her. Like, she's, like, tripping out, and, like, there's a slow-mo effect on her face. I was just like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, it gets it across. It gets the message across well. But I'm like, I've seen this before, and I've seen it be done better and differently. So I was like, eh, not crazy about that weird slow-mo effect. But other than that, I really liked the other, there are some excellent shots in this show.
Yeah. I agree with you about the drug sequence, but when she kind of gets out of her body and she's in Will's, like,
universe,
area,
whatever.
That was really cool. It's just, like, it's so cool, because, like, they're just getting integrated in each other's worlds, but they don't quite fit there.
Yeah.
They have no idea what's going on, too, so that's nice.
Yeah. I guess that's a frustration when you're watching these kinds of shows. Like, as an audience member, you know so much more than the characters do. And
right.
You just want them to get to the point where they know what's going on, and you know it will take a while. And
that's frustrating. You know
it will. It is just so frustrating, because you're like,
you're obviously in each other's heads. Like, come on, why don't we just, like, use this for the force of good, and we all get it now, okay? Good.
Yeah.
Let's move on. But yeah, it takes time.
It's not like Static Shock, where you could just snap your fingers and suddenly everyone knows, like, this one thing about the plot. So,
Life is easier on Static Shock. Anyway.
All right. So, I don't know if we want to move on to Riley? Yes, let's move on to Riley. So. I think, were there any other people? We briefly mentioned the bus guy. Did we take off everyone on the list?
No, actually.
Who are we missing?
So we've got Riley, we've got the police officer, Will, and we have the Mexican actor, Lito.
Yes.
Do you want to...
My only note for him is his little montage in his trailer made me laugh so much. I love that montage. It was so great.
Actually, when I was talking earlier about how, like, you know, you can see things that would be cut, like, one of the first things. And that, like, that montage goes on for so long.
Oh, it does, but it was so funny.
But I loved it, too, you know? And that's one of those things that you just lose. But, yeah, that was hilarious. I loved Leto's opening, where you think that it's like, oh my gosh, he's like a badass or something, but then you find out he's just an actor.
I was so scared. I was like, what is going on? Is he like, I don't know why I was making so many parallels to Hero in my head, but I was during the show, and I was like, is he gonna be some kind of like weird Siler character where like they're all good people except for this one guy or something? But no, he was an actor, and I breathed a sigh of relief, and I was like, oh, thank God.
I feel like that opening, like, where you introduce, like, a character doing something super, like, weird or cool or whatever, and you find out they're just an actor, like, that has been done a lot of times. But, like, it's something I never get tired of because you're always surprised.
No, I liked it. I was simply like, this is very... When the nun came out and was like, I love you, I was like, this is a little weird. Like, I kind of just rolled with it, but no, it was weird. And it was meant to be fictional, but I was like...
And then we have that, the scene in the trailer.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And we have the nun character visiting him.
Just like, what? That was just strange, like, when he was, like, being like, oh, like, my heart belongs to another, I was like, bro, are you, like, just acting all over again, or is this, like, a legit thing? Like, I was just like, what is happening right now? I mean, he was humping, like, a corner of the room, like, twice. I was like,
not just once. Twice. Once was bad enough, but twice.
I was like, what is happening right now? But, and I felt slightly bad at her being rebuffed, but I was also like, this was just a very strange situation for everyone to be in.
It was very awkward, and, yeah.
It's just like, she looks down, he looks down, things are awkward, things get more awkward.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
I mean, is there anything else about him, though? Because he
didn't have much to contribute other than us knowing that he thinks he's going a little bonkers because of the whole, I'm going to shoot your brains out line.
Well, he describes his, like, the things he's seeing of Angelica as visions of suicidal angels. Which is how it's described in that scene, which I actually really liked.
I thought it was interesting that he specifically thought she was an angel and her name is Angelica, like... I see what you did there, creator.
I actually didn't see that.
I only see that because I wrote down my notes what her name was. But I was like, oh, I see. So let's just go back to Angelica for a moment. I guess it's just me kind of throwing out my thoughts since you can't really respond without spoiling things. But I was like, is she giving birth? Is she symbolically giving birth? Is she not giving birth? Because, like... the guy who helps her out, Jonas, is, like, saying something about... I feel like he alluded to something about either birth or children. And I was just like,
what? He did, yeah.
So, I wasn't sure at that particular moment when I first started watching, like, is she giving birth to invisible supernatural children or something completely different?
That's definitely what's happening. She's giving birth to invisible supernatural children. You figured it out. We don't even need to watch the rest of the season.
Shut up. But anyway, at the time I was very confused. I mean, I think it's a little more clear now that it's just kind of like she's trying to connect these strangers and for some greater purpose, whatever that is. And clearly, not horn-rimmed glasses guy is going to be after the rest of them. So, I'm trying to think if I have any more notes. I think I have some more notes about Will, but I think that's all I have.
Do you have any more about Riley? So we've got her nice drug sequence.
Well, they have a bit of it intertwined, like, plot line. Let me look through my notes real quick.
There's a fight. And
I don't know how I feel about the guy who introduced her to this
drug.
Yeah, for one thing, I'm having trouble coming up with a term for this connection. I don't know if I should call it teleportation. I guess it's more like astral projection. I guess that's mm-hmm. it. It's astral projection.
Yeah,
but
I think that's relatively fair for the moment.
That's what I'm gonna go with. I don't know how I feel about this guy who introduced her to astral projection. Clearly the guy she hangs out with, the two, like, drug smoking, like, chavs, are, like, complete jerks and, you know, are just ready to kill him. But I wasn't sure, again, because I'm not really understanding what they're saying. I don't understand what's going on, and I don't really quite understand what they're saying. So I wasn't sure if they were just, like, I guess they were just trying to get money from him so they could go to America? Is that what went down? Or was there something more specific going on with the whole drug thing?
Essentially, that's kind of what happens. The thing about a lot of these mini-plots that we're getting is that we get such a tiny little fragment of the story at one time that it can be confusing. And a lot of times, it'll become a lot more clear as it progresses what exactly happened in not just this scene, but in other different sequences. So,
okay, no, you don't want to give things away, and I get that.
Yeah, basically. But I liked the way that the, you know, whatever you want to call him, let's call him the drug dealer, the way that he kind of reads her.
He seemed very empathetic.
Yeah, he reads her very easily, and he's like, oh, you know, you tried to insulate yourself. I tried to insulate myself, too. And, you know, until I found something that reminded me what it felt like to be alive. And I was like, yes, yes, this is cool. And then he's like, drugs. And I'm like, what?
Not cool.
Stop. Not cool. Drugs were never the answer, children.
Yeah. But... yeah, I mean, I guess I wasn't too surprised that that was how he ended up facilitating the astral projection, but I did,
But he wasn't really, like, going around, she wasn't telling her that, oh, you're gonna go and move your body, or move your mind someplace, and your body's gonna stay here. I feel like it was just drugs, and that's how she kind of did it.
Okay, so, like, it's more kind of like finding your center, that kind of a deal. Like
the drugs, like, opened her up to this connection.
Okay,
but
that's not everyone's connection,
right? Because, you know, does everyone have a sensate?
All right. Okay, because now I'm thinking. I don't know if you're giving it away, but now I'm thinking. Okay, there's be other ways to access this connection, but.
No, I'm not spoiling. Yeah. Well, I don't think I am. It's hard. It was a while ago.
But yeah, I'm just thinking back to her in the apartment. I wasn't too crazy about the ending just being everyone shooting each other a la, like, Dear Sister style. Like, you know what I mean by Dear Sister?
Oh, yeah. I thought you said your sister. No, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, sorry. Yeah, Dear Sister. Yeah,
just,
I know.
I don't know, just now, I just remembered, like, the Dear Sister SNL skit where everyone just shoots each other. I'm just like, kind of went down in a less humorous fashion in this episode.
I think it was just equally as humorous.
Well, that's their bleak sense of humor. But...
Then... Unless you have anything else,
I'm almost ready to wrap it up, but I'm just.
No, I'm gonna move on to Will.
I want to say something about Will. Any notes about her? No, I think. I just like the way she was incorporated in Will's scenes and vice versa. That was Let's move on to Will for our last guy. Do you have more notes or?
No, just go on to Will and. So Will is the Chicago police officer who actually...
Is he a rookie? Is he not a rookie? He gives off that rookie vibe.
I don't think he's a rookie.
Yeah. I think he's relatively new.
He's a young guy, but I don't think he's that new.
Yeah.
And so he is the one who actually goes and sees where Angelica died in the church.
Yes. He's getting to the root of it all.
Right, so he's actually getting... He knows a lot more than anyone else, at least in this case, for the moment. Not that he knows much, but he is, I don't know, central, at least in this moment. Because no, everyone else thinks they're just going crazy.
Yeah, out of all of them, he has the most information, and maybe Riley has the second most information since she was also there.
Right. You know?
But even she's not sure how she astral projected, or that she did astral project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we open with him, and he thinks that his neighbors are playing loud EDM music, but it's actually just in his head from Riley, the DJ.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say, again, I know you got to suspend your disbelief, but man, the fact that that apartment, the empty apartment that's not owned by anyone was just unlocked.
I agree.
Or the fact that if someone was living there, it was just unlocked. I was like, yeah, okay. Like, that's never gonna happen, especially in a place like Chicago. Sorry. like, there'd be squatters or someone there. There was another weird little, like, the one other not realistic thing. I was like, when he's, like, picking up all the crime scene stuff, I was like, bro, you're not wearing gloves? That's, like, Law and Order 101. You have to wear gloves. What are you doing? You're tampering with the evidence. Then they're gonna pin it on you. I watch too much. I don't even watch that many crime shows. It's just, like, I've read enough crime manga and seen enough crime shows to know that's how it goes down. Like, you gotta wear the gloves, man. But anyway, suspending your disbelief. Back to Will. Yeah. Back to Will.
So, Will and his partner, Diego, I'm assuming that's his
name. Yeah, his name's Diego.
Are going around the neighborhood in a bad part of town, and they're talking about how their cops hate gangbangers and gangbangers hate cops.
Ugh, tropes, man.
Tropes, yeah.
You love them and you hate them at the same time.
They give you a lens through which to view the universe, especially if you can invert them. But, yeah.
I mean, the reason why stereotypes and tropes are so prevalent are because...
They're easier to understand.
They're easy to understand, and also when you're thinking about in terms of a movie, and this is not a movie, so that's why these things tend to be less of a problem in TV.
Right.
When you think about in terms of a movie, how short it is, 2 hours, you can only put so much information into one storyline, so you have to have these shorthands of stereotypes to kind of convey information, rather than going into big, long storylines about a character, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I get why they're used, but it doesn't make it any better, but I'm just like... Oh, here we hear again about police versus gangbangers, and... Okay.
But do you think that they kind of twisted the stereotype? Yeah.
I mean, they made him out to be, they made Will out to be a more honorable cop who's willing to save this one kid who gets shot. But I did find the conversation that they had in the back of the police van very fake. Like, bro, this kid is not gonna spill his life story about how his dad wasn't there for him. Jesus, that's not how teenagers work. That's just not how teenagers work. They don't, like... Anyway, I get it. Like, story-wise, it's a nice touch. And if he comes back, it'll be something to connect over or something important about him. But I was like, bro, I've been working with teenagers recently. That's not how they talk. They just lie and obfuscate and hide things away until you build trust. And, I mean, I guess bringing him to a hospital is a way of building trust, but, like, come on here. But, I mean, I did, you know, that does make you root for him saving this kid when he should have, by all everyone else's account, leave him for dead.
Yeah. It's, in my notes, this is how I described him. In all capital letters. Will is a good guy. Like, they bang you over the head with that. Like, he is not just...
It's like...
He is a fantastic effing guy. Like, he is a good guy. Like,
he is the moral paragon and et cetera.
Right. Like, you see all these people who are like, yeah, whatever, he's just a kid in a gang, whatever. And he's like, I have to save him.
True.
I don't know, it kind of... They don't really play it that way, but it also kind of makes him kind of naive. Not yeah. that he's valuing human life, though.
Because you just see why you also, you see the relevant reasons from Diego and the woman at the hospital why he those are valid reasons.
They're
not nice reasons, but they're valid.
Awful.
Like, we have to, you know, take care of the other patients in this hospital, and that's why we stopped treating gunshot wounds. Like, it's horrible, but it makes perfect sense. Unfortunately. Yeah.
It was a complicated plot line, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one that I appreciated.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's hope going forward we'll get more depth onto Will, because right now he is just good guy cop.
Yeah, he's just good guy cop.
He's just a really good guy.
Yeah. Hopefully we get some more nuance from him later on. And,
yeah.
I have to say, with the show, I really do admire how they kind of throw in social issues. Actually, I feel like they throw in social issues pretty much every storyline.
Wow, you picked up on that.
Hey! No, I'm serious. Like, I didn't think about it deeply until just now. But I was like, they actually throw in pretty much every storyline. Well, let me look at, except for maybe, I would say, okay, so, and right now, from what I've seen, there's not too much of a social storyline with the bus driver or Leto.
Right.
But I think with everyone else, there seems to be social issues in their storyline, which I respect. I think that's awesome how they kind of threw it in there without making it too anvil dropping you.
I know.
Do you think it's anvilicious, as the TV shows people like to say?
Anvilicious. Well,
you know what I mean by that, right?
No, I do.
An anvil. So, like, to describe for people who don't know what I'm talking about, like, when someone drops a moral on your head, like it's a gigantic anvil from a cartoon, that's called being anvilicious.
I think each plot line taken by itself is okay, but as the show progresses, you will see that, each of the characters gets their own, like, social plot and gets, you know, they are all wrestling with complicated issues, and to make that a reality, sometimes you're bending the reality. Like, it's not really realistic that all of these people are dealing with these crazy issues. Like, almost all of their lives are gonna start going, like, pretty weird. And I'm not even talking about the, you know, the mind connection thing. Like, they are all living very exceptional, strange lives. And I get, and I don't mind it, I guess, because it's a TV show, you know?
Right,
but at
right.
the same time, it's a little, I wouldn't call it, like, a moral anvil, but taken together, it feels occasionally like the creators had all these ideas for a moralistic show.
These are the people who made The Matrix, Melissa.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you didn't get much more anvilicious than that.
Right. So, like, it's usually hidden behind a veil enough that I don't mind it. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the issues that they are exploring are important, and you just don't see them enough in, you know, regular TV. So I'm not going around complaining.
Right.
But there are certain times in the show where, like, a lot of the characters are going through really unusual, strange things.
Okay.
And I'm just like, you know, this is not realistic at all.
It's like taking you out of the story. It's like stretching a bit. Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
And we can keep talking about this as the show progresses. You know, this is just the very beginning. And, you know, I feel like as the show goes on, you'll see what I mean. But at the same time, the more you start caring about the characters, the less you start like, you stop caring. You know what I mean?
About, like, the crazy
right
leaps they have to make to justify certain story
things. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right, I got you. Okay, cool.
But, I think that was a good job.
I'm excited. I'm still excited to, like, you know, finish off the show since I have heard good things about it. And, yeah, it looks very interesting.
I think it's a solid show.
Yeah.
I'm excited to rewatch it. I really am.
All right, cool. So I think we're done talking about this episode for today. So next week we will return with episode 2 of... I was going to say Into the Badlands. My God, wow. What have you done to me?
It's been so long.
This is the second TV show we've covered. Or this is the first one since Into the Badlands. So saying that 5 times has been ingrained in my brain. Sorry. Next week, we will come back to Cloud Atlas. Kidding. Sensei. we will come back to Sensei.
True that.
And yeah, it's going to be fun. So... hit us up on Gmail or Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or whatever social media you can find us on. Those are the only ones you can find us on.
Creating a Snapchat.
We're not. Hit us up on one of those social media accounts if you want to recommend any shows for us to watch. Rate us on iTunes. That would be really awesome. And yeah, thanks for listening. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.